This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Hello, this is Natalie Pinchem, and I will be reading summaries of articles on vascular disorders, interventional neurosurgery, oncology, the skull base, and stereotactic radiosurgery, published by the Journal of Neurosurgery on October 25th, 2013. Stromal cell-derived factor 1 promoted angiogenesis and inflammatory cell infiltration in aneurysm walls, a laboratory investigation by Brian L. Ho and colleagues. Stromal cell-derived factor 1 is a chemokine with a robust role in angiogenesis and inflammation. It has been shown to recruit lymphocytes within the walls of abdominal aortic aneurysms. The authors demonstrate that stromal cell-derived factor 1 is expressed in human cerebral aneurysms, mouse carotid artery aneurysms, and mouse intracranial aneurysms. There were increased levels of progenitor cells expressing CXCR4, the receptor for stromal cell-derived factor 1 in mice developing carotid or cerebral aneurysms. Human aneurysms and murine carotid aneurysms have endothelial cells, macrophages, and capillaries in the walls of the aneurysms. The presence of capillaries in the walls of human aneurysms was associated with the presence of macrophages. Stromal cell-derived factor 1 promoted endothelial cell and macrophage migration and promoted capillary tube formation. When mice were given antistromal cell-derived factor 1 blocking antibody, there was a significant reduction in endothelial cells, capillaries, and cell proliferation in the aneurysm wall. Mice given antistromal cell-derived factor 1 blocking antibody developed significantly fewer intracranial aneurysms. These data suggest that stromal cell-derived factor 1 is associated with angiogenesis and inflammatory cell migration and proliferation in the walls of aneurysms, and may have a role in the development of intracranial aneurysms. Photobiomodulation inside the brain. Photobiomodulation inside the brain, a novel method of applying near-infrared light intracranially, and its impact on dopaminergic cell survival in MPTP-treated mice, a laboratory investigation by Cecile Moreau and co-authors. In this study, the authors describe a novel intracranial device that provides neuroprotective therapy to diseased brain cells. The device applies near-infrared light to the brain from inside the brain. An optical fiber was linked to either a light-emitting diode or a laser and was implanted in the lateral ventricle in rodents. The device was stable in freely moving animals, and the light filled the cranial cavity. Measurements showed that light intensity declined substantially as distance from the source increased across the brain, but was detectable up to 10 millimeters away. There was no observable behavioral deficit or any evidence of tissue necrosis at the optical fiber tip, where light radiation is most intense. Finally, the intracranially delivered light led to neuroprotection of midbrain dopaminergic cells against Parkinsonian insult. Consistently, there were more dopaminergic cells in Parkinsonian mice irradiated with light than in those that were not irradiated. In summary, the results showed that near-infrared light can be applied intracranially, does not have toxic side effects, and is neuroprotective. This work in rodents serves as a starting point for work in the larger brain of monkeys and hopefully for clinical trials in humans. True petrochlival meningiomas, results of surgical management. A clinical article by Rami Al-Mefti, Ian Dunn, and co-workers. Petrochlival meningiomas are among the most formidable of tumors. Complete resection is the only method of permanent tumor eradication. Preservation or improvement in neurological function is the goal of treatment. The authors describe their experience with surgical management in a series of 64 patients operated on by the senior author. The patients' tumors averaged 3.6 centimeters in diameter. They frequently extended into the cavernous sinus. Resection was performed with the aid of skull base approaches. Grade 1 resection, which involves removal of the tumor along with affected dura and bone, and grade 2 resection, which involves removal of tumor and dura, were achieved in 72%. Immediate postoperative cranial nerve deficits were frequent, with most improving in a few months. Karnofsky performance status scores improved or were unchanged in 83% of patients. Pulmonary embolus occurred once. The combined progression and recurrence rate was 20%, with no recurrences in patients undergoing grade 1 resections. The authors conclude that true petrochlival meningiomas of all sizes can be totally and safely resected with excellent functional outcomes, although complete resection may not be possible in some cases. Radical surgical resection, based on preoperative study and maximal operative effort, coupled with judicious intraoperative judgment, is the treatment of choice. The authors also note that in their practice, residual tumor is managed expectantly and radiation therapy is reserved for the surgically unfit patient or for the complicated recurrent setting. The accuracy of predicting survival in individual patients with cancer. A clinical article by Douglas Konziolka and colleagues. The estimation of survival in a patient with cancer is one of the most fundamental components affecting patient care. The authors sought to determine the accuracy of predictions made in actual patients using factors known to be relevant to survival. Do population-based factors maintain their value for individual patients? The authors found marked intra-observer and inter-observer variability in survival predictions. Most observers were poor at choosing longer-term survivors who actually responded to the treatment they were given. The authors conclude that in an era of personalized medicine, population-based information should not be used, or used only cautiously, to make upfront predictions about the perceived value of care. This has implications for patients, physicians, and payers. Morphological and clinical risk factors for posterior communicating artery aneurysm rupture. A clinical article by Hidetoshi Matsukawa and co-authors. Recent studies have shown posterior circulation aneurysms, specifically posterior communicating artery aneurysms, to be more likely to rupture than other aneurysms. To date, few studies have investigated the factors contributing to posterior communicating artery aneurysm rupture. The authors aimed to identify morphological and clinical characteristics predisposing to posterior communicating artery aneurysm rupture. The authors retrospectively reviewed 134 consecutive patients with posterior communicating artery aneurysms. They divided patients into two groups, those with aneurysmal rupture and those without aneurysmal rupture. They then compared morphological and clinical characteristics. Morphological characteristics were mainly evaluated by three-dimensional computed tomography angiography and included diameter of arteries, size of aneurysm, dome to neck ratio, neck direction of the aneurysm dome around the posterior communicating artery, aneurysm bleb formation, whether posterior communicating artery was fetal type, and the existence of other intracranial unruptured aneurysms. The results showed age less than 60 years, history of hypertension, lateral direction of the aneurysm dome around the posterior communicating artery, and bleb formation to be associated with posterior communicating artery aneurysm rupture. The present results demonstrated that a lateral projection of a posterior communicating artery aneurysm might be related to rupture. Stereotactic radiosurgery for arteriovenous malformations of the cerebellum. A clinical article by Greg Bowden and co-workers. Arteriovenous malformations of the posterior fossa have an aggressive natural history and propensity for hemorrhage. Although the cerebellum accounts for the majority of the posterior fossa volume, there is a paucity of stereotactic radiosurgery outcome data for arteriovenous malformations of this region. The authors sought to evaluate the long-term outcomes and risks of radiosurgery for cerebellar arteriovenous malformations. This single-institution retrospective analysis reviewed the authors' experience at the University of Pittsburgh with gamma knife surgery between 1987 and 2007. During this time, 64 patients underwent radiosurgery for a cerebellar arteriovenous malformation. Arteriovenous malformation obliteration was confirmed by magnetic resonance imaging or angiography in 40 patients at a median follow-up of 73 months. The actuarial rates of total obliteration were 53% at 3 years, 69% at 4 years, and 76% at 5 years. Obliteration rates were higher in patients with an arteriovenous malformation volume of less than 4 cubic centimeters and no prior embolization. An overall annual hemorrhage rate of 2% was documented during the latency interval. Despite the unfavorable location of cerebellar arteriovenous malformations, a permanent neurological deficit due to adverse radiation effects was seen in only one patient. This study indicates that stereotactic radiosurgery is a relatively safe and effective means of treating symptomatic arteriovenous malformations in the cerebellum. Thank you for listening. The Journal of Neurosurgery mobile app is now available in iTunes and the Google Play Store. Just search for JNSPG to download the app for your mobile device today. For more information on how to submit your research to the Journal of Neurosurgery, please visit thejns.org and click on Info for Authors.